I'll take them out for you. They crossed the road side by side. Kitty was glad that Matt seemed to be more himself now. She wondered if anything else had made him behave so strangely in the kitchen, and she longed to know who Edith was and why he didn't want to talk about her. I don't remember seeing any files when your grandmother showed me the safe. Matt frowned as he waited for her to enter the hotel ahead of him. Kitty laughed. That's because she showed you the new safe. That's the one we store all the business things and guests' valuables in. I meant the old hotel safe. Grams keeps it for her own personal use. No one knows about it. He followed her to the elevator. I'm assuming it's in her suite? She nodded. Of course. Miss Kitty? The evening receptionist called her as she waited for the elevator to return. I've taken your grandmother's post up to her salon. Oh, thank you. She'd forgotten to check the pigeonhole where all her grandmother's personal post was placed. It must have been quite full for Mary to have taken it upstairs. The frown lines on Matt's face had deepened as he entered the elevator, pulling the gate closed behind them and pressing the brass button for the next floor. You know, far too many people have easy access to wander in and out of yours and your grandmother's private rooms. Most of our staff have worked here for years. Nearly all of them have lived locally for all of their lives, and only a few staff are permitted to enter the rooms. All of Kitty's most vivid memories were of living in the hotel, so she had never thought much about it. It had always been normal to consider the staff as a kind of extended family. Even as she denied what he'd said, she had a horrible feeling that he might have a point. Times had changed, and perhaps the way they had always lived at the Dolphin needed to change too. Whoever had alerted the man in her grandmother's rooms had to be a staff member. The Mr. Smith incident had also shaken her confidence. So you would know exactly who could get into your room and your grandmother's suite? Matt leaned on the wall of the elevator as they headed upstairs. Yes, well, mostly. Didn't we already have a similar discussion about this when I told you my room had been searched? Kitty strode out of the elevator as soon as the door opened, and Matt slid back the gate. She still found it hard to believe that the mysterious Mr. Smith and the anonymous letters could have anything to do with her mother's disappearance. The war seemed such a long time ago now. When she had first left, her grandmother had assumed that Eloard had gone to visit some of her bohemian friends and had left Kitty behind so as not to unsettle her. It hadn't seemed terribly odd at first that Eloard hadn't been in touch for a few days. She often took off for London or other parts of the country to stay with various people, none of whom were known to her grandmother. It had been the source of many arguments between them. It was only when the days had stretched into more than a week with no contact that the alarm had been raised and the police contacted. Where's the safe? Don't tell me it's behind that awful picture of the bowl of fruit over there. Matt's voice broke into her thoughts. Fine, I won't. She bit back a smile as he strode confidently forward to move the picture, only to discover a blank wall behind the frame. Very funny. Where is it? Kitty walked across the delicately patterned floral carpet to the window seat that ran the length of the sash window overlooking the river. She lifted off the padded seat cushion and ran her fingers under the edge of the sill until she felt a small notch in the wood. With a faint click, the sill lifted, revealing a dark metal safe. Kitty extracted a tiny key from her master bunch and opened the lock. Once open, she took out the large manila envelope that occupied most of the space inside the safe. Here you are. This has everything the investigators did to try and find my mother, and what little they discovered about my father, although that wasn't much. Grams's main focus was on finding mother.
Are there any pictures of her?
Kitty nodded. Yes, a few, and I have some more in an album in my room if you need them. Matt took the file and sat on the sofa to study the contents while Kitty relocked the safe.
She wondered what he hoped to find in a battered file of dusty old papers from the 1920s. She had long given up on finding out what had happened to Eloed, her hope having diminished with every passing birthday, Christmas, school play, sports day, and prize giving. Her father had left at the start of the war, 2 years before her mother's disappearance. All she knew about him was his name and that he was probably in America, and she wasn't sure exactly how she knew that. To distract herself from her own thoughts, she turned her attention to the bundle of mail the receptionist had left on top of her grandmother's bureau. She swiftly sorted the post into advertising material, personal mail, and official correspondence. The advertising material went straight into the waste paper basket. The clearly personal post she clipped together for her grandmother to read on her return. Kitty couldn't resist taking covert peeps at Matt, noticing the firm line of his jaw as she busied herself with her task. He appeared engrossed by the file, making notes from time to time on his notepad as he read. "Anything jumping out at you?" she asked. "Not really. They seem to have done quite a thorough job searching for her. It seems she bought a ticket for London but wasn't seen beyond Exeter. None of the other sightings were ever verified. As you said, it must have been difficult with people moving around during the war." She picked up the last of the letters. There was something familiar about the plain envelope and local postmark. "Matt, I think this might be another one of the anonymous letters." He abandoned the file on the sofa and came to take it from her. Her fingers shook as she passed the envelope over. Matt sliced the letter open with her grandmother's paper knife and shook the contents onto the open bureau, being careful not to touch it. "I doubt if there will be any fingerprints, but you never know." He opened the single sheet of paper out flat using the blade of the knife and a pen. "You have had enough time. You know what is due. It's time you gave back that which is not yours to keep."
"That makes absolutely no sense. Why can't these people, whoever they are, just come out and say what it is that we're supposed to have that isn't ours?"
Kitty shook her head.
"And even if I did know, then how would we be able to return whatever it is?"
"Kitty, are you sure your mother didn't leave anything behind?"
"Only me, and a bag of clothes."
She was aware that her voice held a note of false gaiety. Matt rubbed his hand across his chin. "And you can't think of anything a guest may have left behind that's gone unclaimed?" Kitty laughed.
"False teeth, walking sticks, umbrellas and a set of golf clubs once, but nothing of any value. No gems or gold bullion."
"Well, somebody thinks you have something that belongs to them, that's for sure. Though you're right. How you are supposed to give whatever it is to them, I'm not certain."
"The whole thing is completely mad. How am I supposed to return something I don't have, and don't know what it is, to people I don't have any way of contacting and who are obviously dangerous?"
It was like being trapped in a penny dreadful novel. She rolled her head slightly, trying to ease the tension knots at the base of her skull. "From this latest message, I'd say we're about to hear more from them." Matt took an empty brown paper bag from the drawer of the bureau and eased the letter into it with the paper knife. "I'll run this down to the police station. If you think of anything or if you hear any news that might shed any light on it, let me know." Matt left Kitty to eat a belated supper while he took the latest letter across town to the police station. The night had drawn in now, and the air held a chill from the river. Matt shivered and tucked his hands in the pockets of his overcoat as he walked. The streets were quiet, with only the occasional dog walker out and about by the area known as the Boat Float, a small inshore marina near the town centre, separated from the river by a road bridge. His route took him past the dock for the lower ferry, and he wondered why Mr. Smith had given instructions to someone to go there. Had he gone himself to meet someone? Or to collect something? Was he connected to the body in the river? Usually it was a busy place during daylight, with the river ferry doing a brisk trade in both vehicles and foot passengers. He made a mental note to come back in the morning to talk to the ferry crew. Maybe they had seen or heard something. The river flowed inky black, the silence only broken by the gurgling slap of the current against the side of the docked ferry. A familiar tingle between Matt's shoulder blades triggered a sense that he was no longer alone as he passed the closed-up green and yellow-striped booth advertising Mr. Fargin's motor coach excursions to Dartmoor. Years of training had taught Matt not to give any outward sign of awareness, but he listened carefully for clues, poised and ready for a possible threat as he slowly turned to continue towards the police station. He kept to the same pace as before, conscious that someone was following in the shadows behind him. Matt stopped in front of a shop window as if studying the contents, whilst using the reflection of the darkened glass to try to see who his follower might be. He pretended an interest in the selection of fancy goods and listened. He thought he caught a glimpse of someone whisking swiftly out of sight, but they were too far away to give him more than a blurred impression of a dark coat with a flash of red. He was almost at the doors of the station when he sensed his follower had gone. Clearly, whoever it was had no wish to get too near the police. The desk sergeant greeted Matt affably, remembering him from his earlier visit, and took the bagged letter from him. "Your Mr. Smith turned out to be a very interesting man, Captain Bryant. Wanted by police in 4 countries." "Really? Any connection to your murder victim?" Matt leaned against the counter while the paperwork was completed. "He's refusing to talk at the moment, but we think they were in the same line of work. They've remanded him in custody till the bigwigs from London get here to question him. Seems his real name is Gerald De Vries. He's something of a specialist in his field." Matt signed the forms, acknowledging that he had received a receipt for the letter. "And what is Mr. De Vries's field?" The sergeant took back his pen and closed his file. "Gem cutting. Precious stones. Diamonds, mostly." Chapter 9. Mrs. Treadwell didn't telephone, and Matt's attempt to contact her on the number she'd given him went unanswered. Mrs. Craven remained resolutely unconscious, but stable at the cottage hospital, and there was no more information forthcoming from the police. Matt's inquiries at the lower ferry also drew a blank. No one had seen or heard anything. No one of Mr. Smith's description had called there that they could recall, and no one had inquired about collecting any goods. He arranged to meet Kitty in her grandmother's suite for luncheon so he could update her.
"This is so frustrating. What are we going to do?"
Kitty had her arms folded as she stood at the window.
"The only thing we can do. Wait. Sooner or later they will contact you again. I think they are probably already watching us."
He told Kitty about his shadow from the previous night. She rubbed the tops of her arms as if trying to physically remove contamination from her body.
"That is so eerie. Should we tell the police? What if they attack one of us?"
Matt swallowed at the signs of panic etched into her delicate features. Once upon a time, before Edith, he would have reassured her straight away. He would have made a joke and promised she'd be safe if she stayed by his side.
"We'll simply have to be careful. Don't leave the hotel without telling me. Have someone trustworthy with you whenever you go out."
She left her post by the window to sit beside him on the couch.
"That's it? That's all we do?"
He couldn't meet her gaze.
"We wait. We behave absolutely normally and we'll hear from them. It's the way blackmailers and villains always work."
He knew that all too well. Kitty shivered.
"You sound as if you have plenty of experience with this kind of thing."
For a moment, she thought he wasn't going to answer her. A shadow fell across his face, and she sensed his thoughts were a million miles away from the Dolphin Hotel.
Matthew?
She placed a hand on his arm. His hand fisted and the muscles on his forearm bunched beneath her touch. Taken by surprise at his reaction, she snatched her hand away.
I'm sorry, Kitty. I think I'm a little jumpy after last night.
That makes two of us, then.
She kept her tone light, although irrationally his reaction had hurt her. As soon as her grandmother called, she intended to try to learn more about Matt's background. So many things about him didn't add up, and with the sinister turn of recent events, she needed to know if she could truly trust him. For all she knew, he could have been the one calling the mystery intruder on her grandmother's telephone. After Matt had gone, Kitty picked up the file on her mother's disappearance that he had been studying so closely the previous evening. The familiar ache started in her chest as she stared at the faded envelope. It had been years since she'd read the contents. She'd only really looked at the file properly once before, when she was 18, shortly before she'd officially been launched into Dartmouth society. She slid the contents of the file out into the space where Matt had been sitting moments earlier. Her mother's face gazed up at her from the top of the pile. The black and white photograph had faded with age, her mother stiff and formal in an old-fashioned dress, with the longer skirts and fussier hats that had been the order of the day. The picture must have been taken shortly before she disappeared, because she was wearing a bracelet made from papier-mâché beads that Kitty had given her for Mother's Day a few weeks earlier. The setting seemed familiar, and she guessed it had been taken locally.
What happened, Mother? Where did you go?
A sudden breeze shook the window frame, sending a shiver along Kitty's spine. She had been too young when her mother vanished to have many memories of her. Snatches of songs she must have sung to her, the scent of a particular perfume her mother had always worn, and jumbled scraps of disjointed scenes were all she had. She knew that they had lived in London before her mother had returned to the Dolphin, and somewhere in her mind, she seemed to think she had been on a ship. Kitty sighed as she read the meagre collection of facts and witness statements that various detectives had collected. She had often wondered if part of the reason Mrs. Craven disliked her was because of her physical resemblance to her mother. They shared the same blonde-brown hair and wide blue-grey eyes. That was all they shared, though. Elowed had been a free spirit, where Kitty was cautious and restrained. Elowed had flouted convention, where Kitty was obedient and followed the rules. She also knew that Mrs. Craven suspected that Elowed had never married Kitty's father, although the file contained confirmation from Somerset House of her marriage in London to Edgar Underhay, gentleman. Perhaps if her mother hadn't vanished, she would have been different. Maybe Elowed herself would have changed, settled down and stayed at the Dolphin. Kitty stared at the photograph. Did her mother hold the clues to all the strange events that were happening now? She flipped through the files. Elowed's bank account had been untouched, her passport still in her room when she'd disappeared. She hadn't packed a bag or taken any of her clothes with her. Not that they had discovered that until later. It seemed that one fine spring day, she had walked out of the hotel, leaving Kitty with her grandmother, and had simply disappeared from the face of the earth. Elowed's friends had all been quizzed, those that had come forward at least, pictures placed in the press, even a slot on the radio. Nothing. Kitty's grandmother had hired three different investigators over the intervening years, and all of them had drawn a blank. For a time, every unidentified female body that had turned up in the river had sparked both a hope and a fear that it was Elowed. The police had listed her as a missing person, but that was as far as it had gone. The war and the shortage of manpower had categorized the case as being of low priority. With her mother's history of taking off whenever she wanted, they had been reluctant to take the missing report seriously at all at first. It had only been later, when Elowood had not reappeared, that they had intensified their efforts to find her. As for her father, if it weren't for the proof that there had been a marriage, then Kitty would have struggled to believe in his existence. There were no pictures or mementos, no correspondence. Maybe her mother had destroyed them if the marriage had been unhappy. Her grandmother had always been dismissive whenever Kitty had asked about him. She knew he hadn't enlisted to fight during the war, but didn't know why. He remained a shadowy figure on the periphery of her life. She wondered if he was still alive, and if he was, whether he ever thought about her. Kitty stashed the documents back inside the envelope, but left the photograph of her mother on top of the bureau. She really ought to frame it and place it in her room with the other pictures she had of her. She took a seat at the window and stared out at the scene below. River life continued much as it had for many centuries, despite the drizzly afternoon. Pleasure craft had replaced many of the trade vessels which had once sailed up the river to unload their cargo. The ferries were busy plying their trade, both upper ferry and lower crossing the river, one at each end of the town, carrying cars, small vans, horse and carts, and foot passengers. The ferries ran on huge chains which held them in place against the current. A plume of steam from Kingsware Station on the opposite bank signalled the imminent departure of a steam train taking trippers off around the country. She rested her head against the glass. She'd watched this scene play out 1,000 times. Her grandmother always said that Elowood had been a restless spirit. Kitty sighed, remembering the times when she too had felt confined by the small town and sense of obligation placed on her shoulders. It was certainly weighing heavily on her now. The telephone on the side table rang out, breaking her thoughts.
Kitty?
Her heart skipped when she heard her grandmother's voice. Grams, how are you? How is Aunt Livy?
We're both fine. Livy is asleep, and I'm not, so I thought I'd call you and make sure you were managing.
Grams, there's so much going on here.
Kitty told her everything that had happened, including the news about Mrs. Craven.
I knew you were keeping something from me when I called to say I'd arrived. I also have a number of missed calls from Matthew, judging by the pile of messages next to the telephone that the help has left for me. I assume this was why he was attempting to contact me.
Probably. He wanted to know more about Mother and the day she disappeared.
Kitty fought to keep her voice from wobbling, anxious not to give her grandmother any indication of how unsettled she felt.
It sounds as if he thinks this funny business is connected to Elowood after all, then. I wonder why he's changed his mind. I'll have to call him tomorrow. It's getting too late here now, and I must confess I'm rather tired and in need of a rest myself.
Her grandmother sounded thoughtful.
Grams, how much do you know about Matthew? He is okay, isn't he?
There was the tiniest of pauses before her grandmother replied.
Matthew is the son of an old friend of mine, General Bryant, and his wife Patience. He is completely trustworthy, although he has endured a great deal. He has an exemplary war record and is very well connected. He was wounded twice during the war and suffered a great personal tragedy. After the war, he remained in the army before moving into a government post. I hired him to ensure you would have someone to support you while I was away.
There was a reproving note in her tone.
Did something happen to him during the war?
He lost someone very dear to him.
Her grandmother's voice was hesitant, and Kitty guessed she was wondering how much she should tell her.
He mentioned someone called Edith?
I'm not sure it's my place to tell you about Edith. It was a terrible tragedy.
I'm sure if Matthew wishes to share that with you, he will.
Kitty knew when to stop probing.
I'm sorry, Grams. I love you. Give my love to Aunt Livy and go and get some sleep now.
The telephone rang again as soon as she replaced the receiver.
I just had a tip-off from the hospital. Mrs. Craven has recovered consciousness.
The enthusiasm was back in Matt's voice.
How is she? Did she say what happened to her? When can she have visitors?
Questions tumbled from her lips. Finally, it seemed they might get some answers.
Hold your horses. The police are with her now.
Oh.
Her great gusty sigh of frustration must have resonated over the telephone.
My contact will get us whatever information she can, and we may be able to see Mrs. C later this evening, depending on her condition and if the police and matron allows it.
A tiny spear of jealousy nudged her in the ribs.
Who is your contact?
Visions of Matt flirting with some pretty little nurse flashed through her brain.
A good detective never reveals his sources.
There was a note of amusement in the fake American accent he used. Kitty was glad he wasn't there to see the flush which had heated her cheeks. Why should she care about how Matt got his information or from whom?
By the way, I just got off the telephone from talking to Grams. She said she'll call you tomorrow.
He mumbled something unintelligible into her ear.
I told her about everything that had happened. I think she's quite tired from looking after Aunt Livy.
She wished she didn't have the sense that she was being excluded from something. She wasn't even sure why she felt that way, but there was something going on, she just knew it.
It can't be helped, I suppose. Hopefully I'll be able to catch up with her soon. Be ready by 7 and we'll see what we can find out from Mrs. Craven.
Kitty hung up the receiver once more and picked up the file, ready to lock it away in the safe. The knock at the door made her start.
Come in!
She had to stop jumping at every little thing. Cora poked her head around the door.
I brought you a cup of coffee. I thought you might want a drink about now, reception said as you were in here.
The older woman entered the room bearing a small circular tray with a delicate china cup and saucer and a plate with some biscuits.
Thank you, Cora.
Kitty cleared the papers to one side as the woman set the tray down on the table.
That looks old, miss,
Cora observed as she passed the photo of Kitty's mother on top of the bureau.
It is. This is a picture of my mother taken when I was young.
Kitty stared at the photograph.
Yes, of course. I'm not sure, but that looks as if it might have been taken at Culliver Steps.
Cora squinted at the picture.
Where?
Cora delved in her apron pocket and pulled out a small black-rimmed pair of glasses. She placed them on her nose and took another good look at the photograph.
Yes, I'd say that was Culliver Steps, just below Scary Tor on Dartmoor. Mr. Fargin takes trippers there in his motor coach.
Golly, how can you tell?
To Kitty, the picture could have been taken anywhere. She had guessed it was probably Dartmoor, but she couldn't have been so precise.
The stepping stone's in the background. There's a pool there too, look.
Cora handed the photograph back before taking off her glasses and returning them to her apron pocket.
Good meeting place up there. Popular with lovers. Lots of people used to go there before the war.
Kitty blinked and nibbled her top lip as she tried to recall if her grandmother or anyone else had ever mentioned Culliver Steps before.
Right, thank you, Cora. This must have been taken when I was a child, though. She's wearing a bracelet I made her.
I don't know how she would have got there then, unless someone took her up on a cart ride or something. A lot of the moor was closed off for military things, as I recall, but then I could be wrong.
It's a nice picture.
Your mother looks happy there, doesn't she?
Kitty gave the picture a last look before stowing it away again inside the folder. Something about Cora's expression when she looked at the photo made her want to hide it from prying eyes.
Yes, I suppose she does.
Cora tucked her tray under her arm, gave her a sympathetic smile, and left the room. As she closed the door, Kitty let out a sigh and sank back onto the sofa cushions. Cora may have provided the answer to one question, but now there were a lot more. What had her mother been doing that day at Culliver Steps? How did she get there? Who had she been meeting? And who had taken the photograph? Chapter 10. Matt glanced at his wristwatch. 7:10. Kitty was late. He was about to call her room when she arrived, breathless, in the lobby.
Sorry, there was a crisis in the kitchen, and I needed to make arrangements for the start of the jazz evening tomorrow. Miss Delaware is something of a diva, but she is a star, and we are very fortunate to have secured her.
She shrugged on her dark blue coat and reached behind the reception desk for her umbrella.
Mr. Potter is giving us a lift in his taxi. He's waiting in the rank. Even though it's not very far, it's a foul night, too wet to walk.
He opened the door for her and followed her outside into the rain. They hurried the few short steps from the front of the hotel to the taxi without speaking, the gusting wind rendering speech impossible. Matt slipped into the rear seat of the cab next to Kitty, and they set off on the brief journey through the town. She slid on the leather upholstery as the car lurched around a corner on the narrow street. Her leg brushed against his, and he noticed her ease away from him, putting a few inches of space between them.
"Do you think we'll be able to see her?"
Kitty broke the silence.
"We should be able to. They said she was feeling better. Matron has given us special dispensation. Of course, she may not wish to see us."
The spring rain was drumming hard now on the metal roof of the car, and the windows had begun to mist over, caused by the damp drying off their clothes. Matt rubbed his hands against the reassuring roughness of his twill trousers to remove the sweat building in his palms. The familiar buzzing started in his ears, and he knew he couldn't bear it for much longer. He wound down the handle to crack open the side window, sucking in the cold, damp air as it entered the car.
"Matthew?"
He was only dimly aware of Kitty taking his hand in hers. He closed his eyes tight shut and focused on his breathing, the way the self-help guides had told him. The rainwater was cold on his face, and he gulped in lungfuls of the cool air as he tried to shut out the memories of the past that threatened to close in and overwhelm him. At last, the roaring in his ears began to subside, and he opened his eyes to see Kitty staring at him, her face white with anxiety.
"Here, you ain't gonna throw up in my cab, are you?"
the driver asked, his gaze meeting Matt's in the rearview mirror. He shook his head.
"Matt?"
There were unshed tears shining in Kitty's eyes, and he became aware that he had her fingers in a vice-like grip.
"I'm fine."
His reassurance came out as a croak as he released her hand. He was aware of the driver's continued scrutiny via the rearview mirror.
"I get a bit claustrophobic, remember?"
Kitty was flexing and releasing her fingers, presumably to try and restore her circulation.
"I'll drop you here."
The taxi jerked to a halt outside the front doors of the hospital.
"Cheers, mate. We appreciate this."
Matt paid him for the short trip. The building was a red brick cottage hospital sited right on the embankment. The receptionist at the main desk pointed them in the direction of the private wing. Mrs. Craven was located in a small, quiet room. The air smelled of soap and stale cabbage.
"I hope she'll be able to tell us what happened."
"Me too."
The scent of the air and the clinical surroundings made Matt's skin itch, and he wanted to finish the job and get out as soon as possible. The elderly woman was propped up on a pile of pillows, her eyes closed as they approached the bed. The papery whiteness of her skin was almost the same colour as her pillows. A fierce-looking nurse in a dark uniform crackled up to them.
10 minutes. She tires easily.
A crepe bandage covered most of Mrs. Craven's hair, with just a few grey curls peeking out. Matt approached the bed with Kitty at his side. The heavy wooden door banged as it closed behind the nurse, and Mrs. Craven's eyelids fluttered open.
"You can come closer. I don't have anything catching," she rasped.
Matt pulled up a chair and offered the seat to Kitty before getting one for himself.
"How are you feeling?" Kitty asked.
Mrs. Craven waved a bony hand in the air.
"I am alive, which at my age is something to be thankful for."
"It was lucky I found you when I did, or you might not have been," Matt remarked. The old lady fixed him with a stare.
"We had an appointment, young man. There was nothing lucky about it."
"Mrs. Craven, what happened?"
Kitty leaned forward. A faint frown puckered Mrs. Craven's forehead.
"I went into the back garden to pull up some weeds. My gardener had missed a few. I wasn't outside for very long, and I heard a noise near the house. At first, I thought perhaps the breeze had blown the back door shut, but there wasn't any breeze."
She paused in her narrative, as if trying to recall what had happened. She motioned for Kitty to hand her a tumbler of water from the bedside locker. After taking a few sips, she passed the glass back to Kitty and continued with her story.
"I couldn't see anything, so I carried on pulling out the mare's tail. I was conscious of the time, and I wanted to get the job done before Captain Bryant arrived. With it being Gladys's day off, I wanted to go back in, so I'd hear the door."
She moved her hand in Matt's direction.
"I'm not sure what made me look up again. I suppose the back door closing had made me uneasy."
Matt wished the old woman would hurry up and spit out the facts.
"So what happened next?" he prompted.
Kitty frowned at him and kicked his foot with the toe of her shoe.
"The door had opened again. Just a crack, not very much, but enough for me to notice. I was still on my kneeler, so I went to stand up so I could go and see what it was. I thought it might be next door's cat, a beastly ginger-striped thing that kills the birds."
She halted again, and Matt noticed her face pale and her skinny ringed fingers began clutching at the white hospital sheets.
"Anyway, at first I thought it might be the cat from next door, but then I realized someone was standing to the side of me."
"Did you get a good look at them?" Matt interrupted.
"Whoever it was wore dark trousers and a man's jacket."
Mrs. Craven's voice faltered again, and Kitty offered her some more water. The elderly woman took a sip and gave the glass back.
"The sun was in my eyes, and she tried to disguise her voice, you know, to make it sound gruff and manly."
"She?" Matt and Kitty spoke in unison. Mrs. Craven closed her eyes.
"It was a woman. At least, it might have been a woman. He or she had this strange giggle."
Matt could see she was tiring.
"Young or old?" he asked urgently.
"Eloed's age."
Kitty stared at Matt. "What did she say?" Matt shook his head. "We'd better go. I think we've exhausted her." He rose from his seat and Kitty followed suit, pushing her chair back into place. He took a last backward glance at the small, wizened figure on the bed, now sleeping peacefully. They had come tonight expecting to get some answers, but were now leaving with even more questions. Kitty frowned at him as they prepared to leave the ward.
"A woman? I don't understand. What did she mean, Eloed's age?"
Matt shook his head. He couldn't think inside the clinical confines of the hospital.
"I don't know."
They strolled together side by side to the front entrance. "The rain has slowed off a little now." Kitty unfurled her umbrella. Let's go for a drink somewhere. Matt knew he needed to get out of the hospital and away from the Dolphin Hotel. Kitty hesitated for a moment, then moved her umbrella to share the cover. Very well. During the short time they had been inside the hospital ward, the traffic had virtually disappeared and the storm had dwindled. Matt turned up the collar of his overcoat and dug his hands deep in his pockets as he walked beside Kitty, grateful for the scant protection of her umbrella. Fortunately, the nearest respectable public house was only a couple of minutes away.
Have a seat and I'll get the drinks. What would you like? Matt asked.
Gin, please.
Kitty collapsed her umbrella and headed for a quiet corner table while Matt placed their order at the bar. Thankfully, the pub was quiet as it was still early, and the foul weather seemed to have deterred people from going out. Her grandmother would not have approved of Kitty being seen in a public house in the town with a young man, no matter how respectable the place was. He carried the drinks over to the table and took a seat next to her.
Thank you. I feel I really need this right now.
She took a large sip of her drink. Matt raised his own glass and took a long pull of his pint.
I know what you mean.
So, where do we go from here? This has thrown us all of a heap. I thought talking to Mrs. Craven would give us some answers. Now I feel more confused than ever. A man or a woman?
Kitty's voice tailed off, and she shook her head as if trying to clear her thoughts. Why did she mention your mother? Did something about the person who attacked her remind her of Eloed? Or was it because you were in the room just now and she was getting tired? Matt took another pull at his drink.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't know if she meant my mother when she was my age or the age she would be now if she was still alive. Maybe it's like you said, she was just too tired to answer you properly and was confused.
Or perhaps her attacker reminded her of Eloed in some way.
Matt replaced his pint glass on the table.
Did I tell you that Cora identified where that picture of Mother was taken? The old picture we found in the folder?
Kitty fiddled with the corner of the cardboard coaster under her wine glass.
Who's Cora?
This was another surprise. He hadn't been aware that Kitty had confided in a staff member.
She works at the hotel. She brought a cup of coffee upstairs as I was putting the folder away and she saw the picture. You met her the day you first arrived. She took you to meet my grandmother.
She folded another tiny pleat in the coaster edge.
Where did she think it was taken?
After all this time, he wasn't certain that knowing the location that Kitty's mother had visited would be of any value, but with the mystery deepening, any clue might help.
Culliver Steps on Dartmoor, near Scary Tor.
She was sure about it.
He was vaguely familiar with the name from various training routes in his army days of artillery practice. Kitty nodded and took another sip of her gin.
She said it used to be a courting spot. Mr. Fargen takes motor coach trips there. He has done for years.
Fargen? The one with the green and yellow booth by the ferry crossing?
Yes, that's the one. You must have seen him around the town. A short man in a yellow and green blazer. Wears a straw boater. He was the one who found the body in the river.
Interesting. How old is Cora? I take it she's local.
Yes, she's lived here all her life, I think. Grams took her on years ago when she struggled to get work. Her son Colin was a bit wild, apparently, and got sent away. I don't know what happened to her husband. She's been at the Dolphin for a long time now.
Did she know your mother?
His question seemed to surprise Kitty. Her eyes widened, and he could see her thinking.
I suppose she must have, but she never talks to me as if she knew her. Maybe Grams told her not to when I was small so I didn't get upset, and she's kept that up.
Is she the same sort of age bracket as your mother?
You mean if my mother were alive?
Matt nodded. Kitty frowned. I never thought about it before. I suppose I could ask her. I would have thought she would have mentioned it before, though. I know a few people who knew Mother when she was young, but most of them are Grams's friends.
Like Mrs. C?
Yes. If your mum grew up here, why is that? She must have had friends her own age, people she hung around with. Kitty took a large swallow of gin and shook her head. Mother wasn't exactly conventional. And Grams thought she was in with the wrong crowd, so she sent her away to school outside Dartmouth. I don't know if Grams really knew who her friends were. Mother was quite bohemian. Her expression grew sad.
No diary anywhere, or any clues for us to trace anyone?
The various investigators all asked that. No, nothing. They couldn't even trace where my father was likely to be. I think Grams mentioned once that she thought he was in America, but I could be mistaken. He's as much a mystery as my mother.
Matt's tone softened when he noticed the sorrow in her eyes. Do you ever wonder about him?
Kitty tossed back the last of her drink. Not anymore. I used to when I was young, but I have no memories of him at all. He could have come forward at any time when all the publicity was out there when Mother vanished. If he comes now, he'll be 23 years too late.
Chapter 11. The barkeeper leaned over the counter.
Excuse me, Miss Underhay. Hadn't you best go back to the Dolphin?
Foreboding gripped her. What's the matter?
Sirens. The bloke who's just come in the public bar reckons as there's smoke coming from the hotel and people out on the embankment.
Kitty was out of her seat before the bartender had finished speaking. Matt handed her coat to her. Her heart pounded against the wall of her chest as she sprinted along the wet embankment. The acrid stench of smoke grew stronger the nearer she got to the hotel, and the eerie wail of the fire siren echoed along the gloomy, rain-soaked streets. The fire engine was blocking the end of the street in front of the hotel. A gaggle of her guests, accompanied by members of her staff, stood in the fire evacuation zone.
Kitty, wait!
Matt caught hold of her arm as she moved towards the fire engine. At least the flames of her imagination weren't leaping from the windows.
I need to find out what's happening, and my staff and guests.
She waved a hand in the direction of the group on the pavement.
Go and talk to the fire crew while I check up on the guests.
He gave her arm a gentle squeeze and headed over to the crowd. She continued towards the fire engine. It only took a few seconds to locate the fire officer in charge.
Are you the proprietor, miss?
Kitty nodded, her gaze still anxiously scanning the exterior of the hotel for any signs of damage.
What happened? Is anyone hurt? Is there much damage?
If the hotel had suffered much damage, her grandmother would be heartbroken. She would be heartbroken. She noticed that the crew were recoiling a large hosepipe which had been attached to a hydrant. The fire officer turned and gave a few more instructions to his crew before returning his attention to Kitty.
The damage is confined to the rear of the premises. No one was hurt, miss. It's mostly smoke. The rain we had earlier stopped the fire from getting a proper hold.
Kitty noticed the guests and her staff being addressed by another of the fire officers.
What happened, though? When can my guests go back inside?
The premises are safe for people to return. If you'd like to come with me, I can show you the cause of the blaze.
He set off along the path at the side of the hotel. Kitty quickly spoke to her guests and followed at his heels, aware that Matt had joined her. As they passed through the normally locked side gate and rounded the corner, the damage was obvious. The kitchen waste bins stood scorched and blackened near the rear of the hotel. A mixture of steam and smoke arising from the melted metal, with a strong stench of burning, hung like a pall in the air. A uniformed police officer stood to the side, talking to one of the kitchen staff.
I don't understand. What happened?
Kitty coughed and frowned as she tried to comprehend the scene before her.
The kitchen waste bins appear to have been deliberately moved to a point close to the building, but out of view of the staff, and then set alight using an accelerant. The contents inside the bins would have been dry enough to light.
The fire officer indicated the remains of the metal chains, which usually kept the refuse containers in the assigned area. Matt stepped forward and peered at the links.
Someone seems to have had a bolt cutter on these.
Before the fire officer could respond, the policeman came over to join them.
Miss Underhay?
Yes.
This is a serious business, miss. I'm sure the fire officer has told you that the blaze was started deliberately.
Kitty nodded. The bins are always secured away from the buildings. It looks as if someone has cut the chains, but I don't understand how they could have accessed this area. The gate is always locked.
Much to her dismay, she noticed Walter Cribbs of the Torbay Herald making notes as he tried to eavesdrop on the conversation.
Her grandmother would not be happy with negative publicity, and ever since Christmas, when Kitty had turned down his advances, he had been looking for an opportunity for revenge. This was all she needed with Miss Delaware and her band due to arrive in the morning.
The policeman nodded and scribbled some notes in his pocketbook. Where were you this evening, Miss Underhay?
Why do you need to know Kitty's whereabouts? Matt asked.
The policeman raised an eyebrow. I'm sorry, sir, you are...
Matthew Bryant, Miss Underhay's security officer.
The policeman appeared to make another note in his book. I'm trying to establish if anyone saw or heard anything earlier this evening.
We were out, visiting someone at the hospital. We stopped for a drink and were about to return when we were told about the fire.
Kitty could still barely take in the events of the evening.
A soft drizzle started, leaving a fine film of water clinging to her hair and face.
You were in the kitchens earlier this evening, though, miss.
Yes, my chef was having problems with the grill. I needed to call a man to look at it.
If I could have a word with you, officer?
Matt took the policeman to one side, leaving Kitty with the fireman. She moved a few steps away from Walter Cribbs and his busy pen. Everything is secure now, Miss Underhay. We have all the evidence we need for our report.
Thank you for coming so quickly. I don't know what would have happened if you hadn't been able to put the fire out so fast.
She shivered as she took in the soot deposits and black scorch marks on the rear red brick wall of the hotel, dangerously close to the storerooms.
We'll be in touch, and if you require the information for your insurance company, the station will have a report for you.
Thank you.
Kitty hugged her coat closer to her as she joined Matt and the police officer. Matt shook hands with the policeman as she approached.
Is everything all right? She asked.
Captain Bryant has been very helpful. We'll be in touch if there are any developments.
The officer stowed his notebook away in his top pocket and took his leave.
Kitty folded her arms. What was that about?
Matt shrugged. He was simply checking out who was where and when.
She could tell from the way he didn't meet her gaze that there was more to the conversation that he wasn't sharing with her.
And?
She asked as he went to turn away from her. His gaze found hers.
And nothing. We should go inside. This rain is getting worse again.
She caught hold of his sleeve as he moved to walk inside the hotel.
I asked a question, Matthew.
Come with me.
She followed him through the kitchen, past the questioning eyes of her kitchen staff. He headed up the back stairs towards the landing and their rooms. Kitty hesitated for a second when he pulled his room key from the pocket of his trousers and opened the door.
After you?
Matt stood to one side of the open door and waited for her to enter. She knew he had noticed her pause and it amused him. Folding her arms across her chest, she marched through the door. She placed her umbrella in the corner of the room and hung her wet coat and hat on the hook on the back of the door before taking a seat.
Well, Captain Bryant?
She deliberately emphasized the captain. He took off his own dripping hat and coat and added them to the peg next to hers.
The war ended a long time ago. I prefer plain Mister, although I admit I find my rank useful when dealing with the authorities.
She wondered what had happened to him during the war, how he had been wounded and what exactly his post-war government job had been. Her grandmother had said his service record was perfect, but many men had gone to war and come home as different people. Matt certainly appeared to have demons he was still fighting, like his fear of enclosed spaces. He reached into the pocket of his overcoat and removed a small object.
Do you recognize these at all?
She stared at the broken pair of black-framed spectacles.
Cora has a pair like those. She keeps them in her apron pocket. She's dreadfully short-sighted. She had them earlier when she looked at my mother's picture.
Mickey spotted her earlier this evening and thought she appeared to be behaving furtively. I asked him to keep his eyes open for anything that appeared out of the ordinary. These were next to the bin where the fire started.
She stared at him.
You're suggesting that Cora had a hand in this?
I think we need to speak to her.
Cora has always been a loyal employee. I've known her for years, since I was a child. I don't understand.
Cora was the one who identified the place on the moor. Do you think she was telling you the truth? Or is it some kind of wild goose chase to get you out of the way for some reason? Matt asked.
I don't know. Why would she mention where she thought the picture had been taken? I would never have guessed Cora would be involved in any of this. The very idea makes me feel sick.
What do you want to do about it?
Kitty stared at him.
I don't understand. It was hard enough trying to believe the evidence of her own eyes without thinking what she should do next.
Do we question her ourselves? Hand her over to the police to question? Do you want to dismiss her? Or do you want to set a trap and see what happens?
Matt waited for her to reply.
Finding her glasses is hardly a presumption of guilt. She could have noticed something herself and been investigating. She's terribly nosy. What do you suggest we do?
She knew from the look on his face that he was several steps ahead of her, and he clearly already had his own ideas on what should happen. His eyes narrowed as he considered.
It's a tricky one. Technically, all we have are her glasses at the scene and Mickey's assertion that she was behaving oddly out near the bins shortly before the fire started.
Unless someone opened the gate from this side with a staff key, no one could open it from the other side.
Kitty hoped Cora had merely gone out to the bins for some innocent reason.
Someone had oiled that lock recently, and it wasn't Mickey.
I can't believe Cora would attempt to burn down the hotel. It doesn't make sense. She relies on her employment here and certainly has no reason to bear a grudge of any kind.
Matt jumped up and began to pace about the room.
I agree. She has had other opportunities to set fires. This was something designed to frighten you rather than do any actual harm. Whoever set the fire knew the rain would make a lot of smoke without the fire being able to take a proper hold. Someone wants you out of the hotel for a while, almost as a distraction. The question is who and why.
The jazz evenings begin tomorrow. Do you think whoever this person is wanted to spoil the events? A rival hotelier, perhaps?
Matt glanced at his watch.
I don't know. It's getting late. I think we need to talk to Cora tomorrow, and I think I also need to talk to Mr. Fargen. His booth is near the lower ferry, and he's been linked to Dartmoor with his tours. It seems too much of a coincidence that his name has popped up a few times now.
Kitty rose and collected her umbrella. Miss Delaware arrives at lunchtime. I shall be tied up with arrangements for the evening for most of the day. The launch of the new summer visitor season is a big event. The local people look forward to it as much as the guests. Matt handed over her hat and coat. I've asked Mickey to let me know when Cora arrives for work. I'll talk to her and see what she has to say. I do believe my poor hat is beyond saving thanks to all the rain. She grimaced as she twisted the limp, felt brim between her fingers. Walter Cribbs from the Herald was buzzing around outside, so I expect the fire will be in the newspaper. I hope we can get to the bottom of all this nonsense before anything else happens. Matt opened the door for her. Or before anyone else is hurt. Chapter 12 Kitty expected Matt to contact her when